Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI. Welcome back. Today we're doing a deep dive into Lan Samantha Chang's The Family Chow. It came out in 2022, and we really want to unpack how it works on, well, multiple levels.
Right. It's definitely got layers. You've got this intense immigrant family story, but it's also wrapped up in a really gripping courtroom drama.
Exactly. And Lan Samantha Chang, she's such a significant voice in contemporary American literature. Her background, growing up in the Midwest with Chinese immigrant parents, you can really feel how that shapes the narrative.
Absolutely. And, you know, her role as director of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, the first woman, the first Asian American, in that post, it says a lot. Her writing often has this precision, this quiet intensity, even when the subject matter is explosive.
Which it definitely is here.
Yeah.
But maybe the most ambitious thing, the thing you need to know right up front, is its connection to a classic.
Yes. It's an explicit retelling, a literary homage to Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov. That's the framework she's using.
Which is quite a task, transposing that 19th century Russian epic onto a modern Chinese-American family in Haven, Wisconsin.
Yeah, this fictional Midwestern town. Cold winters, you know, those quiet values. And right at the center is the family business, the Fine Chow Restaurant.
35 years they've poured into it.
Right, and it's become this local institution. But for the family, especially the sons, it's both, well, their legacy and maybe their prison.
Which leads us straight to the patriarch, Leo Chow. He's the Fyodor Karamazov figure here, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. He's this man of just immense appetites. Food, money, women. He dominates everything.
And that public charm, the successful restaurateur, it's a mask.
Completely. Behind closed doors, the sources paint a picture of cruelty, greed, serious emotional abuse. He's almost the symbol of the American dream gone sour, you know? Success built on exploiting others, even his own family.
So that's the pressure cooker environment. And it all comes to a head when the family gathers for Christmas.
Yeah. Resentment is just simmering, practically boiling over.
So what actually happens? What's the spark that lights the fuse?
It's that Christmas Eve dinner. Leo's holding court, basically. And he just lays into his sons, mocks their careers, dismisses anything they've achieved.
Oh, classic emotional manipulation.
Totally. But then comes the bombshell. He announces he's cutting all three sons out of his will. Everything goes to the restaurant.
Wow.
And as if that wasn't enough, he announces he's engaged to a much younger waitress from the restaurant.
Oh, that's just twisting the knife.
Exactly. And Dagu, the eldest son, he's already deep in debt to his father. He just snaps, completely loses it.
And this is public.
Very public. In front of everyone, he screams, "I'll kill you." A direct witnessed threat.
Okay, so the stage is set.
Perfectly. Because the very next day, Christmas morning, Leo Chow's body is found.
And the detail is just chilling.
Isn't it? Frozen solid in the restaurant's walk-in freezer.
That image. Frozen solid. It feels like a metaphor for the whole family's emotional state suddenly made horribly real.
It really does. And that's the pivot point, the moment the story just flips.
Because with that public threat and the known debts,
Tagu becomes the obvious immediate suspect. The immigrant family saga, all that history and tension, it suddenly morphs into a courtroom procedural. The focus narrows right down to patricide.
So Leo's dead, Tagu's accused. Let's talk about the other two brothers, Ming and James. They're sort of left to pick up the pieces, right? And they each seem to represent a different path, a different way of dealing with their father's legacy and, well, their identity in America.
That's a great way to put it. They really do embody different responses. You have Dagu first, the Dimitri parallel.
The passionate, impulsive one.
Right. He's a failed musician, tangled up in debt, always craving his father's approval, even while hating him. His rage is so visible, so public, and it makes him incredibly vulnerable. He becomes a kind of symbol of how easily someone can be misread, condemned, when their pain becomes this public spectacle, especially in a community maybe prone to stereotypes.
Then there's Ming, the middle son, the Ivan figure, the intellectual.
Exactly. Ming's the successful one, the lawyer in New York. He really tried to escape, aiming for what you might call hyper-assimilation. He wanted distance from the family, the restaurant, the sort of messiness of his heritage.
But the murder pulls him back in.
Drags him back. He has to come back to Haven, help with Dagu's defense, and it forces this huge crisis for him, intellectually and emotionally. He has to confront everything he tried to leave behind.
And finally, James, the youngest, the Alyosha parallel, he seems like the moral compass, maybe.
He definitely starts that way. He's kind, empathetic, very idealistic, a college student just wanting, you know, truth and harmony in his family.
But the murder forces him down a different path.
It really does. His search for truth becomes this painful investigation. He can't just accept the easy answer that Daegu did it, so he starts digging, almost like an amateur detective, uncovering family secrets and losing his innocence along the way. It's a journey towards a much sadder kind of wisdom.
And we can't forget the mother, Winnie Chow. She's been suffering Leo's abuse and infidelity for decades, working tirelessly, seeming so stoic and pious.
Winnie is crucial. She appears long-suffering, almost passive. But underneath, she holds these incredible depths, these hidden aspects.
And the secrets.
Oh, the secrets. She's the keeper of so many of them. Her journey through the trial is really one of, like, quiet rebellion. It forces everything she's kept hidden for her own survival, maybe, and to protect her sons out into the open. It's a kind of self-emancipation, but it comes at a huge cost.
So the trial itself becomes this public spectacle. How does the prosecution build its case?
They go for the simple, damning narrative. Angry son, mounting debt, public threat, voila, murder. Easy, right?
And the book suggests this plays into existing biases.
Very much so. Chang highlights how this narrative taps into latent stereotypes about, quote, the inscrutable and clannish Chinese family. The community, largely white and Midwestern, sees this immigrant family's dysfunction through a lens of prejudice. It becomes exotic, dramatic, maybe inherently suspicious to them.
So the trial isn't necessarily about finding the objective truth.
Not really. It becomes a battle of narratives. And as Chang puts it, and this is such a key insight, the story that won was not the one that was true, but the one that was most believable.
That's a powerful critique of the legal system.
It really is. It shows how the system struggles, maybe is even incapable of understanding the decades of complex emotional history, the abuse, the silent suffering that led to this point. It prefers the simpler, albeit prejudiced, story.
Meanwhile, James is doing his own digging. Not for legal evidence, but for some kind of human truth.
Exactly. He needs to understand why. Why all this sorrow? And his search leads him right to the heart of the family secrets, the ones his parents, especially Winnie, kept buried.
And the actual revelation, the truth about Leo's death, it doesn't come out in court, does it?
No, and that's such a masterful subversion of the courtroom drama trope. The climax isn't a Perry Mason moment. It happens in a private, devastating conversation between James and Winnie.
Where she reveals the full complex story.
Yes. And it implicates another family member, not out of simple malice, but in a way that feels tragically understandable given the decades of suffering. It reframes the death entirely.
So the ending isn't about neat justice being served.
Not at all. It leaves you with this feeling of fragile, uncertain peace. The legal system does what it does, but the real resolution, if you can call it that, is within the family. The brothers are finally free from Leo's shadow, but they're deeply scarred, and they have to figure out how to relate to each other now, carrying this shared trauma.
Okay, let's try to summarize the big takeaways for you, the listener. There seem to be a few core themes running through this. First, that idea we started with, the American dream and its dark side.
Definitely. Leo's success, the restaurant, it's presented as this achievement, but it's hollow, built on exploitation. It becomes a kind of gilded cage, especially for the sons. It questions what that dream even costs.
Second, family. The inescapable bonds. Despite all the dysfunction, the distance Ming tried to create, the crisis just pulls them back together, highlighting how shared history, even shared pain, connects them.
Yeah. Those ties are incredibly powerful, for better or worse. And third, that tension between legal justice and actual truth. The courtroom provides an answer, but not the answer, not the whole messy truth of their lives.
Which leads to the fourth point, secrets, the weight of secrets. The family was, as the book says, a family of secrets, and the restaurant was their hiding place. The murder just ripped the doors off that hiding place.
Mm-hmm. And thinking about James's journey, that quote really sums it up. He had wanted to know the truth, but the truth had destroyed his peace. It's that classic theme, ignorance might be bliss, but knowledge comes with a heavy burden.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? The novel pushes us to ask ourselves about justice and loyalty. When we judge an act, how much weight do we give to the visible crime versus the invisible history, the years of silent suffering that might lie beneath it?
And that's where using the Karamazov framework is so brilliant. Chang takes this universal, canonical story about faith, doubt, and family conflict and makes it incredibly specific, showing how these grand human themes play out in the particular details of the Chinese-American immigrant experience.
Yeah, the story feels both timeless and deeply rooted in a specific cultural context. The struggles of the Chow family belonging, resentment, assimilation, the price of success, They resonate far beyond Haven, Wisconsin.
It proves that sometimes the most universal stories are found when you look closely at the specifics.
A powerful read, definitely one that stays with you.
Absolutely.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.